Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Racial classifications are wrong. That principle was enshrined in our law at great cost following the Civil War. A century of resistance to race neutrality followed, but this court's landmark decision in Brown finally and firmly rejected the view that racial classifications have any role to play in providing educational opportunities. Since then, the court has broadly enforced the Constitution's prohibition on the use of racial classifications. Whatever factors the government may use in deciding which jurors to sit, who you may marry, or which primary schools our children can attend, skin color is not one of them. Grutter is a glaring exception to this rule. This court should overrule it.
So this is the oral arguments actually from back on Halloween of last year, the very end of October, because you had a case, actually two cases, a pair of cases that were heard at the Supreme Court, one having to do with UNC, the other having to do with Harvard, both filed by the group Students for Fair Admissions, who are seeking to overturn or strike down or declare unconstitutional, or at least not unconstitutional, but against federal law, because each of them deals with different things. The Harvard case deals with Title VI, the Civil Rights Act. The UNC case deals with the 14th Amendment. And they're very similar, and the distinctions between the two universities' programs may not be all that important for the philosophical question of whether there should ever be race considered in any way for any reason whatsoever in admissions to college. And that's what these two cases are asking the Supreme Court to decide. And as you heard him there, that was Patrick Strawbridge. He was the attorney for Students for Fair Admissions, SFFA. You might sometimes see it acronymed out. Basically they say, look, race should never be used. And it's wrong. And the cases that have allowed race, like Grutter, like Bakke, those cases should be completely overturned. And, affirmative action over the years has evolved, and it's currently what I would describe as relatively light compared to what it used to be. And, in the old days, it was basically like, well, we think black people were harmed in the past, and so let's make sure that we get 20% of our student body be black to make up for that. That's not allowed, and that way of approaching it is not the way it's done. The way it is done is that you've got kind of benefit, or not even benefit is not the right word, because Harvard, for example, would deny it's a benefit, and so would UNC. They would say that it's considered among all the other factors. And if everything else is equal, then the university has an interest in creating a diverse student body for various reasons. Most notably among them, educational benefit, because you're engaging with people who represent different viewpoints than you hold. And so it's not that they're looking to get, 10% black or 20% black or anything like that. It's that if you wind up having students who are diverse in a variety of ways, race is one of the ways in which you're trying to sort of bundle analyze the students. Now, they're saying that they don't look at race in the way of trying to count to it. Of course, it wouldn't be allowed to. But the problem is twofold. Number one is you have in the Harvard case, the argument is sort of an old argument, but in new clothing, which is that, look, if you are benefiting black students, for example, you are harming other students who are highly qualified Asian Americans, who are less likely to be admitted to Harvard than equally or similarly qualified white, black, or Hispanic applicants. Help some means hurting others. The North Carolina case is that considering race in admissions, when you don't need to do so, in order to achieve a diverse student body means that you're using race in a way that you shouldn't have to, don't have to, and therefore that's illegitimate. And again, the distinctions between the cases, you know, for the Supreme Court, they're going to matter. For the opinions they're going to issue, are going to matter. Those opinions are likely to come out possibly even today, but over the course of the next week before the end of June for sure. And so I wanted to, I've been kind of waiting to talk about these cases until there was an appropriate time. And since the, you know, the rulings are imminent, I want you to understand the issues before the news breaks, as it might even, you know, today about this case. So again, Patrick Strawbridge is saying, look, race doesn't work. It shouldn't be used. It shouldn't be allowed in admissions. This is from the UNC case.
First, Grutter is grievously wrong. Its view that the educational benefits of diversity justify racial classifications contradicts the 14th Amendment's guarantee of equal treatment. It relied upon stereotypical assumptions that race is necessarily a proxy for one's viewpoint, and its purported limits are empty and self-contradictory.
So the theory behind Grutter that if you could have enough black people, you could have enough diversity of viewpoint doesn't make any sense. Second,
Grutter also creates many negative effects. Some applicants are incentivized to conceal their race. Others who were admitted on merit have their accomplishments diminished by assumptions that their race played a role in their admission. And there is no evidence that after two decades, Grutter has somehow reduced the role of race on campus.
And this has been one of the issues is that Sandra Day O'Connor, who authored the opinion in Grutter, said, you know, when, say, 25 years, we shouldn't have to have this anymore. We should fix it. And if it hasn't been fixed, you know, if the imbalance in, you know, racial makeup of the student body based purely on qualifications alone hasn't been remedied, well, this isn't the remedy, right? Because using race is something we should get away from. And if we aren't able to get away from it at this point, well, this remedy clearly doesn't work, and so we should abandon this remedy even if we haven't solved the basic problem because the remedy is bad. And we're on, let's see, I think this is 2004, so I think we're on 19 years since Grutter's. So we're right in that time frame of accomplishing what she put out as a test. Third.
Finally, no one is actually relying on Grutter. The opinion forecast its own demise, and it made clear that race-based admissions must be diminishing over time, but that has not happened. UNC officials testified that they cannot imagine any scenario that would actually lead them to end their racial preferences. UNC claims license to use race in perpetuity, and the district court held that Grutter allows this.
And the problem is, at least in part, okay, is that if you're bumping some, you're harming others. Like, core objection to this system is that if some people are getting any kind of help from being of a race, then other people are getting some kind of a disadvantage for being of a different race. In a zero-sum game like college admissions, where some get in and others do not, there's a finite number of seats, helping some means hurting others.
One of the problems with Grutter that I think illustrates this specifically is Grutter's suggestion that race can only be used as a plus factor and never a minus factor. But as many of the dissenting opinions in that case observed, and cases from or opinions from this court have since observed, that makes no sense in a zero-sum game.
And that's the idea. You can't help some without hurting others, and that's why it's discrimination. That's why it's a violation. Now, the questions that came were kind of interesting, and there was a lot of discussion. This is a 5 hours, I think, of oral argument between the two cases, and I listened to all of it because I like this stuff. It's interesting. And I wanted to give you just a taste of some of the questions. Elena Kagan asks,
in your view, it really wouldn't matter if there was a precipitous decline in minority admissions, African-American, Hispanic, one or the other. But, you know, suppose that it just fell through the floor. Would it just, you know, too bad?
Well, I don't think that it's going to fall through the floor if the university is actually committed to the broader diversity it wants. Because
right. I know you think that, and there's been obviously a lot of the litigation has been about that. How much will it decline, and your expert and their expert. But the logic of your position suggests that that really doesn't matter.
And that's the argument, right? He says, look, we shouldn't be looking at race. And if we don't look at race, as is prohibited, like, for example, in a place like Florida, then we still wind up getting a diverse student body. Florida doesn't have a problem with diversity. We still get diversity if we stop looking at race. It can be done. She says, what if we stop looking at race and we wind up having no black people in college? And that's kind of the argument in behalf of the affirmative action or the, you know, the programs that they're trying to defend. And, you know, she says this is the only way to make sure that that doesn't happen. And she's saying, so if we wind up not admitting very many black people, is that just too bad, so sad? And he says, well, again, you know, we can do it without race.
That has not been the experience, for example, in Florida, which is race neutral, has very similar demographics to UNC. And by UNC's own admission in this record, actually achieves better racial diversity, as well as 50% greater number of programs.
Right, well, that
on
gets
campus.
Us back.
And that's the question is, could you get better diversity by not looking at race because you're so fixated on that particular? Could you get a better educational experience? And the other part of this, and this is important not just for understanding this issue and how the case is going to be decided, but also for understanding the relevance of this case, for example, to the military. Okay, and the military academy, something that's not going to come up in this particular conversation, but does come up extensively when they talked with the Solicitor General of the United States, Elizabeth Prelogar. But this is Elena Kagan making the argument that gets made for the value of having people admitted to make sure that you have racial diversity in your student body at the university level.
I guess what I'm saying is your brief, and this is very explicit in your brief, is like it just doesn't matter if our institutions look like America. You say this on page 11 in your reply brief. And I guess what I'm asking you is, doesn't it? I mean, doesn't it? These are the pipelines to leadership in our society. It might be military leadership. It might be business leadership. It might be leadership in the law. It might be leadership in all kinds of different areas. Universities are the pipeline to that leadership. Now, if universities are not racially diverse, and your rule suggests that it doesn't matter, well, then all of those institutions are not going to be racially diverse either. And I thought that part of what it meant to be an American and to believe in American pluralism is that actually our institutions, you know, are reflective of who we are as a people in all our variety.
And so if you don't do whatever is necessary to make sure there's a variety of demographics represented at the university level as students, you will eventually get homogeneity, the opposite of diversity, when it comes to business leaders, political leaders, social services, education, all of the leadership positions that are produced through, you know, culture-shaping influences that are produced through media rooms, okay, that are produced through college will all start to look white. Or perhaps, I mean, theoretically, could all start to look Asian. You know, that's a possibility if you look at the Harvard case. And she's saying, well, that's not good. And then it comes with the military, the same question. Do you have an effective military, as has happened in the past, when, you know, you have a very diverse, say, enlisted ranks, but all the officers are white, or most of the officers are white? And that becomes a problem for the military for effective leadership and management and operation and trust and all of the other things. So just I'm laying out the kind of the terrain here. There's a lot of terrain. There's a lot of very interesting audio. We'll talk about it throughout the morning. Here's what I expect to happen. I'm not alone in this expectation. The expectation is that this court, based on the questions they've asked and the philosophies that they represent, is likely to tell UNC and also Harvard and pretty much every other school in existence that there's either no legal way to use race as any factor in admissions, or that they're going to reduce even farther. Somehow, it's hard to see how because it's already been reduced heavily. They're going to reduce even farther the amount in which you can use race for admissions. That would be my expectation, and I would think that that's likely to be either a 5-4 or a 6-3 decision. But, of course, that's why you wait for the actual opinion to come out. 523 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hey, Pensacola, it's Judy Lacey with Barbieri Plumbing. We've been Pensacola's plumber for over 50 years. From leaking faucets to replacing sewer lines, we get the job done. My dad, Louis Barbieri, started this company over 50 years ago with a vision of providing the best service with honesty and integrity for our community. He also started our flat rate pricing system, where you know exactly what the job will cost before the work is done, so there are no surprises. Last year, we were voted Best Plumbing Company in Pensacola's Best of the Bay. Voting has begun in this year's Best of the Bay, and we would appreciate your vote again. We know you don't always need a plumber, but when you do, call Barbieri Plumbing, 850-477-8782. That's 850-477-8782. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. Remember, Barbieri Plumbing.
License number RF 1106-7749. The Florida Department of Health in Escambia County works to protect, promote, and improve the health of everyone in your community. Listen in today at 10:30 to the Pensacola Expert Panel when Director Marie Mott will give a public health update. That's today at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Heart failure, carpal tunnel syndrome, shortness of breath, stomach issues, lower back pain. How does it all add up? If you have heart failure and any of those seemingly unrelated symptoms sound familiar, it's time to talk with your cardiologist and get the full picture. They may add up to transthyretin amyloid cardiomyopathy. ATTRCM is a rare and underdiagnosed disease. Recognize the signs and discuss them with your doctor soon. Learn more at connectwithyourheart.com. That's connectwithyourheart.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Do you struggle with occasional nerve aches in your hands or feet? Try Nervive Nerve Relief from the world's number one nerve care company. Nervive tablets contain alpha-lipoic acid to relieve nerve aches, weakness, and discomfort, plus B-complex vitamins to support healthy nerve function as you age. Live life with less nerve discomfort with Nervive Nerve Relief. Learn more at NerviveHealth.com. And try Nervive Pain Relieving Cream to block nerve pain signals at the source. Use as directed.
We're committed to providing you with the latest and most accurate information during hurricane season. So tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the latest updates and stay safe.
Wing out the GIMP.
Good morning, 527 News Radio 92.3, informative local Van Halen. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. We have ourselves a storm. Yeah, tropical storm, Brett. That's right, going to be a hurricane later today probably. And then we'll see what it does when it gets over Puerto Rico, Dominican, Haiti, Cuba, because it's like headed right on that track. Could push south, could bend off into the Atlantic. Could go, I mean, one possibility is that it could go, like, go west and then come up over Cuba and then come to, you know, somewhere in the Gulf. So we'll see. It's not expected to be all that strong. And obviously going over land is going to diminish it. But go over land, diminish, go over open water, strengthen. So once it gets past the land, we'll, you know, we'll see what happens. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
At least six people were shot after a Juneteenth celebration in Milwaukee yesterday. Police said that it stemmed from a fight between multiple females, and there were four female victims, two male victims. Their ages, this is really sad, range from 14 to 19. And authorities did say, though, that there were no fatalities in that. Former President Trump not too happy with Quinnipiac and Fox News for a poll that shows him behind President Biden by about 4 points in a presidential matchup. Trump wrote on Truth Social that it's not just an old poll, but he calls it a bad poll as well. Said other polls represent him being much higher.
Which layer of statistical evaluation did he use in order to indicate that it's a bad poll? Or was it just because it gave it results he didn't like?
Only the most scientific, the most
only
best.
The greatest, most scientific minds have evaluated. Absolutely. This is a terrible poll because not the results. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And the list of intended recipients of suspicious white powder is now getting a little bit bigger. It's gone beyond just Kansas now. Authorities, including the FBI, investigating. So far, they're saying about 100 of these letters have been sent, and that's just in Kansas. But now similar letters containing the notes and powdery substances have been addressed to high-profile national figures like former President Trump and Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas.
All right. Very good, David. Thanks so much for the update. Manna's Donut Strike starts tomorrow between 3 and 6 p.m. You've got Escambia and Santa Rosa County law enforcement officers are going to be all over the area collecting food at different locations during the afternoon. This is an important time because it's another way of, you know, raising food, raising money for Manna, who does just fantastic work. It's kind of heartbreaking work you know, to think about people who are hungry, especially children that they do so much work with. But
and they don't get government subsidies, too. So they rely solely on donations.
And MANA is one of my, like, we always give to MANA. You know, when we do our tithe, MANA is one of the organizations that always gets our tithe money. Escambia County Fire Rescue, Sheriff's Office, Gulf Breeze Fire Rescue, Gulf Breeze PD, Midway Fire, Pace Fire, PPD, and PFD are all going to be involved in this starting tomorrow. Today, Michelle Salzman, U.S. Or state representative for Florida for our district, District 1, the north part of Escambia County, is going to be having a work day. So that's going to be going on from 1 to 3 at Beulah Church on Mobile Highway. And that's basically an if you need help with something, go. Because everybody's going to be there. The tax collector, the county commissioner, the VA, Senate offices for the U.S. for Scott and Rubio. And we'll be talking to her in about an hour. But that's today from 1 to 3 at Beulah Church on Mobile Highway.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. A tourist sub on a trip to the Titanic, missing since Sunday with five people on board, if it's intact, probably has enough oxygen to last until Thursday, according to the Coast Guard officer in charge of the search.
It is a large area of water. And it's complicated by local weather conditions as well.
Rear Admiral John Mauger, the Titanic wreck's about 400 miles from Newfoundland, Canada. President Biden meets today with artificial intelligence experts in San Francisco, yesterday announcing more federal funding to fight climate change.
$600 million for coastal and Great Lake communities. And
the Department of Energy is going to announce that it's investing more than $2 billion to modernize our electric grid. To be more climate resilient.
Speaking in Palo Alto alongside California Governor Gavin Newsom.
Fox's Kristen Goodwin. There are also several campaign fundraisers during this three-day California trip. At least six teenagers are shot in Milwaukee, one a suspect now in custody. Police are looking for others. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 News Radio 92.3. It's 71 degrees right now, partly cloudy skies here in Pensacola this morning. Yesterday, Santa Rosa County leaders, on Thursday, Santa Rosa County leaders are set to vote on a resolution that would make June pro-life month.
The great part about it, that if we today declare Santa Rosa County the month of June pro-life month, we will be the first county in the state of Florida that leads this effort.
Commissioner James Calkins there, and he says it would be a great way to mark the one-year anniversary of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, which he called one of the greatest moments in U.S. history. Back in 2020, Santa Rosa County voters did pass a referendum to make the county Florida's first sanctuary for life county with a 57% vote. The chief financial officer of the Porch Creek of Indians was killed in a car crash in Baldwin County over the weekend. That happened on the Baldwin Beach Expressway in Robertsdale. 64-year-old Tim Spiegel, 47-year-old Christy Lowe, and her daughter, 19-year-old Margaret, were all killed in this crash. Police say it was caused by an alleged drunk driver. 60-year-old David Colburn was booked into the Baldwin County Jail on DUI and manslaughter charges. The wharf in Orange Beach is planning a major expansion.
That's right. A groundbreaking ceremony was held Friday for Portside on Main. The project includes 33,000 feet of retail, office, and entertainment space, and another 26,000 square feet of green and open space is included, featuring an outdoor stage for events and concerts. It's expected to be completed by next summer, and a second phase of the project, centered around Main Street and Canal Road, is in the planning stages.
And that's News Radio's Joe Ford. Well, it looks like Floridians helping at the southern border have been pretty busy. Governor DeSantis gave a quick update yesterday on the efforts of National Guard troops, FDLE, and FHP officers and others that are part of Operation Lone Star down in Texas. And Governor DeSantis says so far they've all made contact with over 10,000 undocumented migrants and assisted Texas law enforcement with over 600 arrests. He says some of those arrests included a person wanted for capital murder and an MS-13 gang member that was on the terror watch list. The Fort Pickens area at the Gulf Island National Seashore is going to stay closed at least until tomorrow after several days of severe storms here in the area. The National Seashore says there's currently severe flooding in the campground and over Fort Pickens Road. Right now, no word on when it will reopen officially, and if you've had camping reservations, you might need to cancel those online at their website. 534, it's News Radio 92.3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. More showers and thunderstorms for today. Storms moving in later on into the day. 70% chance of rain with a high near 90 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 71. We're going to be seeing our storm chance continue for Wednesday. 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms. A few storms could be strong, high near 88. And Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 70 degrees. Stay connected to the Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
72 right now in Pensacola, 72 also in Gulf Breeze, and the cool spot, 69 in Milton. Our next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
News Radio Pensacola is your trusted source for hurricane coverage. We have a team of experienced broadcast experts who are dedicated to keeping you informed about the latest weather conditions and forecasts. We'll provide you with up-to-the-minute updates on any developing storms, as well as safety tips and information on how to prepare for a hurricane. So for the latest hurricane coverage, stay tuned to News Radio Pensacola on AM 1620, 92.3, 95.3, and on HD Radio at 98.7. We'll keep you safe.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru. The men and women here at Anderson Subaru are committed to the Subaru Love Promise, a promise between us and our communities, a promise to make the Gulf Coast a better place to live, to work, and to play. And we're proud of what we've accomplished. From our ongoing support of the Pensacola Breast Cancer Association and Ascension Sacred Heart to volunteering with Feeding the Gulf Coast, we've conducted clothing drives for Loaves and Fishes and charity auctions for Gulf Coast Kids House, and we support Sherwood Elementary School in multiple ways. We're committed to the pets in our communities, too, by supporting dog adoption events with Phoenix Rising Rescue, Barktoberfest with Pensacola Humane Society, and Potty Gras with Wolfgang Park and Brews. And the love continues. Through donations, volunteering, and monetary support, Anderson Subaru is making a difference in the lives of our neighbors and our community. The Subaru Love Promise. That's a promise we intend to keep. At Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Carr City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Red Tail Live presents a multimedia experience that's out of this world. Laser Invasion. Suit up for a fantastical journey through the multimedia cosmos of our imagination, powered by a full battery of high-tech lasers, state-of-the-art lighting, out-of-this-world video, and concert-quality sound. Laser Invasion, featuring the music of David Bowie, Queen, The Police, Portishead, Soundgarden, and more.
Coming to the Sanger Theater on June 22nd. Get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com.
Are you ready to start saving money on your energy bill?
Join Compass Solar Energy this Friday at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Compass Solar has been locally owned and operated here in the Pensacola area for over 20 years, and they are Northwest Florida's premier solar company. Call in with your questions as we navigate through the rising costs of energy. Friday at 9 with Compass Solar Energy and the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Text alerts are a great way to stay informed and connected. They're quick, easy, and convenient.
So what are you waiting for?
Download the News Radio Pensacola app and opt in for push notifications.
Good morning, 538, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Yesterday, we had a chance to talk to Santa Rosa Sheriff Bob. You know, it's fun, Candy. You'll appreciate this as just a radio person.
Oh, I did. Did you tell him I love him?
Always. No, but for the longest time, you know, we had Sheriff Simmons,
right.
And then we had Chief Deputy Shane Tucker.
That's right.
And this is very easy for me to distinguish when I'm talking about him. One's a Scambi, one's Santa Rosa, one's a sheriff, one's a chief deputy. Now we got both sheriffs are on
pretty bad,
more routinely.
But yeah. Amazing.
I sometimes want to call Chip Bob. I sometimes want to call Bob Chip. I'm going to give somebody the wrong county one of these days.
They are the most opposite.
I know.
I mean,
except that neither one of them has any hair. You know, it's very similar. Chip has a little bit.
Oh, I never thought about that. Yeah, they have.
Well, it's useful.
They shave their heads.
It's tactically.
Probably.
I mean, they're not. Anyway, but no,
hair farmers.
I know I'm going to screw this up one of these times. So anyway, yesterday we had a chance to talk to Santa Rosa County Sheriff Bob Johnson. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Good to have you. So before we get to anything that happened over the last weekend, I did want to ask you just kind of the follow-up on the Nico's Steakhouse investigation. The last we had heard from you, there was one person that your investigators were definitely trying to talk to and thinking that that would kind of unlock and explain the whole case. And the way I understand it is that maybe you talked to that person and it did not really clarify things. So where do we stand with investigating this poisoning?
Yeah, that one didn't pan out, so we're continuing the investigation, and so is the other agencies involved. They're continuing theirs as well.
So at this point, we basically don't know. We don't know deliberate, inadvertent, employee, other person. We just really don't know.
Correct.
But we do, I mean, I'm assuming the theory is still that it happened at the steakhouse, that it wasn't like these folks were in a house together or something like that.
Right. That's what we're looking at anyways. And right now it's so sketchy and it's so hard to prove, you know, if somebody can't.
We lost you there for just a second, Sheriff. I'm sorry. What was that last part? It's so hard to prove what?
If somebody went inside, tampered with something,
yeah.
If you don't have cameras on the food source and things like that, then it's going to be hard to prove.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I'll just say, we went there for Father's Day yesterday. I mean, you know, I figured, hey, now is the safest place ever, the safest time ever, you know, to go to a place, and it was great. So, you know, if somebody wants to know whether it's safe, I went. You know, I'll tell you, I went.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's
and
good.
And the people who own it, the people who own it are great people, and they're working with us as best they can. And, you know, it's terrible that it happened, but, you know, they've got to get back in business and you know, they're, like I said, they're good people.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, something like this happens at your restaurant, and you're like, oh my God, what the, you know, and this is just, you know, how is this possible? And, they, you know, they seem to be good Christian folks and all this. Like, it's just such a bizarre story to have it happen there. How did the storm affect your deputies and your agents? You know, any particular, I don't know, stories or rescues or anything that had to be done that you can tell us about?
No, not any rescues or anything. Of course, you know, as you, when there's that many lightnings, I lose power at the office, which is normal. But our emergency lines and everything stayed up, and we weren't down for long and went back to business. But, it got pretty nasty up there.
And it continues. It's kind of like, you know, I know what had hit, like, say, the Warrington area or Pensacola Beach on Thursday, but then we had power out, like, over the weekend in Milton because, you know, little different batches of storms hit different areas. But you're just saying that, generally speaking, from a law enforcement perspective, y'all haven't seen anything that's been especially out of the ordinary or storm-related?
Yeah, no, it's for us, unfortunately, living in the panhandle, it's normal to see trees down after a storm and things like that, but no injuries that we're aware of, so that's the main thing.
I also want to double check and make sure, because I heard a report earlier this morning that a law enforcement officer named Johnson, who drives a Charger, had been involved in an incident where they got hospitalized. And I just want to make sure, not you, different county, right?
Apparently a different county. It definitely wasn't me.
Right.
Thank goodness.
Many Johnson officers, you know, might be confused for each other. So I appreciate that. Last thing I want to do is, I know it's still July 1st, so it's still a little ways off, but not that soon. I mean, not that far. That's not even 2 weeks away. It is going to change the law where you no longer need to have a concealed carry permit in order to concealed carry. I assume you're getting asked about this, and I also assume a lot of people are very misinformed about what exactly takes place on July 1st. Am I right?
Yeah, on July 1st, if you are legally able to get a concealed weapons permit, then you're legally able to carry concealed without it. But that does not go into the vehicle. So, like, if you're carrying concealed inside of a vehicle, the old law still applies. It has to, if you don't have a concealed weapons permit, it needs to be in a snapped holster or a zippered case, if I'm understanding the law correctly. But if you can legally possess and conceal a firearm with a concealed weapons permit, then you're eligible to do it without one as of July 1st.
Okay, so that's the first I've heard of that. You're saying that so what I had been interpreting it as is anyone who would be able to get a permit can behave as if they had one. You're saying that's true, but not inside the car, that somebody can't have it, for example, like on the seat or in the boards next to them or that kind of thing. Is that right?
Yeah, and let me tell you, the law, I read it, and as most laws are, it's ambiguous in certain places. So I'll tell you this, our legal counsel read it and she put out a bulletin to all our deputies. So as of July 1st, they'll know how to act if they encounter somebody with a concealed weapon that doesn't have a permit. So we're trying to get everybody up to speed. But, you know, I'll tell you this much. Let me don't tell anybody wrong, but I was under the impression that that the same old law applies for inside the vehicle. But don't quote me on that one. If you're saying you read it and it didn't say that.
Well, it's been a while. I mean, you know, if your legal counsel read it and you saw different, could you send me that advisory? Because I'd be curious to know what their interpretation is. I want to make sure we tell people the right rule, right? Obviously. It seems to me like, see, I hadn't even aware of that wrinkle. But it seems like the biggest wrinkle is that people are going to think, well, now I can carry anywhere. Now I can take it to a bar. Take it to the legislature when it's in session. Or now, if I had a felony, I'm still allowed to carry a weapon. No, all of those rules still apply.
Yes, correct. If the rule applies to a person with a concealed weapons permit, it applies to you without one, obviously. So, no, you can't carry it on a military base. No, you can't carry it into a public meeting like a city hall or anything like that. Airports, you can't carry in airports. You can't carry in the courthouse. It all applies. It's the same as if you had a concealed weapons permit. You just don't have to go through the process now. So, they need to brush up on all the different places you cannot carry, and because those will apply to them.
You cannot take it to a school. You know, you can't take it to the college campus. You know, these are things that I fear people are going to run afoul of, because not being permit holders, they will not know the law. And also, just as a side note, if you don't have a concealed carry permit, you don't have any reciprocity in other states unless they also have permitless carry. So you can't just go somewhere. I mean, Alabama, you're fine because they have permitless carry. Right. But if you go to a state that has reciprocity with Florida and you don't actually have a permit, you can't be like, well, I'm from Florida. That's not going to do it for you, right?
So it's not. So, and that's another thing I would say to anybody wanting to carry concealed. Look at the different states that have the constitutional carry, and those are the ones you can carry in. But you said if you go to some place that does not have constitutional carry, it does not apply to you. You will get arrested for carrying a concealed firearm, and you don't want a felony on your record. So that's something you definitely need to brush up on. And I tell a lot of people, you know, go ahead and get the permit. It's cheap.
Yeah.
That's it. It's not a long, drawn-out process. And then you're totally covered. You can go to all the other states that have reciprocity with a lot, and you don't have to worry about it.
And also, no open carry. That's not going to be allowed either. So just,
open carry part did not pass.
That's right. We'll keep telling people this because I know people are going to mess this up, and I want as few of them as possible to do it. Sheriff Bob Johnson, as always, sir, thank you for the good information. Thanks for keeping us safe, and we'll talk to you again next week. Most definitely. 547 here on News Radio 92.3. You know, one thing, I did some following up on his comments about whether the new law would protect you in having a concealed carry weapon inside your motor vehicle. And I've requested to see the letter that the attorney wrote, the advisory, because I'm curious of the reasoning there. But in looking over the law itself, and I even checked with one of the law co-sponsors, Alex Andrade, and asked, you know, hey, have you heard about this? And he said, no, I don't think that's accurate. There's a couple of provisions that are in the law right now, and this law touches on those because of some of the changes. But I think what the sheriff was talking about there is there's one provision that protects you. Like, if your bosses don't like guns, you are still protected in taking a gun in your car on the parking lot at your workplace. The boss can't make that not happen inside your car. Now, they can make it so you can't take a gun inside. That's still private property, right? But on the parking lot is one where you're protected in having the gun. And so my suspicion is they're reading that provision as being still in place. And since that's the one that's most relevant to motor vehicles, and also there's one about if you don't have a concealed carry permit, anyone over 18 is allowed to have a handgun in a car in a secured case. Like, you know, in a holster, you know, in the glove box or in a zipper pouch or something like that. Not easy access is kind of the idea there. But the law is also written specifically to override that stuff and say that anyone who would be eligible would be able to carry. So I think the sheriff is appropriately being cautious about what the law actually says, but I don't think that interpretation is correct. But I'm still looking to get a little bit more definitive answer on this, or because I'm kind of waiting to see what their what's the reasoning that led them to believe that the law was as they said. 5:49 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you are thinking about buying or selling a home, you know what you want is a good expert. Like, you want somebody to really be able to catch mistakes. You want somebody who's going to really know the value of the property if you're buying or selling either way, know how the market works, what the market will sustain. If you're buying, you know what the sellers are interested in doing and how to work with them to get the best deal for you. If you're selling, you know what the buyers are going to want and how to make sure that they pay the most that they will possibly pay in order to get you the best price for your deal. That's Christina Leavenworth. I mean, she's just fantastic at this. And part of that being fantastic comes from getting, you know, so much volume of homes that she interacts with, 230 homes plus sold last year. But you know, the reason she got to 230 is by doing things when she was only selling, you know, 10. And doing those things so well that it works across so many different properties. So really great at selling a lot, but also really great at making. You kind of feel like you're her only client. I don't know how she does it. I know I couldn't do it, but I know she's great at it. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke Realty.
You love your car or truck, right? We love it too. This is Mike Ryan at Mike Ryan's Truck and Auto Accessories. For a cooler summer and protections from harmful UV rays, we'll tint the windows. For safety and security, we have alarms, backup cameras, and dash cams. And for the most beautiful vehicle on the block, our full detailing service will make it look brand new. We have so many custom accessories, it's impossible to list them all here. So come see us at Mike Ryan's Truck and Auto Accessories on Industrial Boulevard at W Street, just north of Marcus Point Baptist Church.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. Bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This week, 1211, a radiant, energetic, and dynamic pop R&B band with a vast range of cathartic and dance-worthy songs, warm vocals, an infectious groove, and fresh sound. This week at Bands on the Beach, brought to you by the Santa Rosa Island Authority.
Hurricane season is here. Millions of people live in hurricane evacuation zones in Florida. This means that if an evacuation needs to happen, a lot of people need to get on the road. But if you're halfway full, you're halfway there. Keeping your gas tank at least half full during hurricane season ensures you won't have to wait in long lines to get gas when it's time to go. And you don't have to travel hundreds of miles. A half a tank of gas can easily get you to a safe location that's tens of miles away. For more tips, visit halfwayfullhalfwaydare.com.
This message is sponsored by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Enjoy a family-friendly and free outdoor movie this weekend. Bring your blankets and lawn chairs to Community Maritime Park Friday night for Movies in the Park. Pre-show activities begin at 6 with the movie Black Panther at sunset. See cityofpensacola.com for more info. Or bring your blankets and beach chairs to the Gulfside Pavilion Friday night for Cinemas in the Sand, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority. Finding Nemo begins at sunset. Submit your nonprofit event at newsradio923.com.
News Radio Pensacola, a great blend of information from local government authorities, local news, businesses, and provocative discussions with great hosts.
It just doesn't matter! 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 It just doesn't
I watched Meatballs over the weekend. So you might be getting a few extra Meatballs clips here this week during the bumpers. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3. I love that, Candy, you knew it, but you couldn't remember for sure which movie it came from. And I love that because...
No, that's right. It just doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, and so because that's one of those, like... It never quite attained the status of, like, a Caddyshack, you know, or Stripes.
I know.
And it's not as funny as, but, you know, it's an Ivan Reitman, and it's still Bill Murray, and it's still, you get the full Bill Murray experience in that movie, so.
I'm trying to find a picture. My nickname in middle school, rather, was Rudy Rabbit and Spaz from the same,
Spaz.
Yeah, which are two
nice.
Separate characters,
right.
Which should
completely
tell you a lot about. It's because my mom would cut my hair short and then give me home perms, so I looked like Chris Makepeace.
Did she give you broken glasses, too, or?
No, that was Spaz, right. And that's because, I'm not supposed to use that word, but you know me. Hey, everybody! And then Chris Makepeace from fourth grade to like ninth grade.
If you have a secret, who don't you tell?
Me, but that's, it's not because I'm a gossip. It's because I get excited. Like, oh my gosh, you know what's going on?
I sometimes tell people that when I'm talking with them, you know, talking to sources, and they'll be like, you know, this is off the record. I'm like, all right, we're good. But in my mind, I'm thinking, man, I sure hope so.
And
I'm really good at it. But it's like, I'm always like, I want to share. I want to tell. That's in your nature. David Wayne in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Tell me what I don't know about Dave. No, I'm just kidding. But I do. I get excited.
You do?
I do.
That's great. Yes. A Spirit Airlines flight from Detroit to Los Angeles was forced to make an emergency landing in Nebraska yesterday. The airline says there was a mechanical issue, but all 188 people were able to get off the plane safely. Pope Francis met with President Biden's climate envoy, John Kerry, at the Vatican yesterday. Kerry told reporters he found him to be in great spirits and in great form. That Kerry was the first official to get a private audience with the Pope since he was in the hospital recently. And the Coast Guard racing against time to find that missing submarine that was taking people to see the Titanic. Rear Admiral John Mauger says the Coast Guard is using all the search resources in the air and in the water that they have. It's about an area 900 miles east of Cape Cod. But they say the submarine has enough oxygen, supposedly, for people to be able to survive about 96 hours.
And it went missing on Saturday, is that right? Saturday or Sunday?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. They only had like one bottle of water each, no food.
Well, yeah, I mean,
can you imagine a bunch of crabby rich people?
It's Gilligan's Island underneath the ocean, right? I mean, they went and now they're missing. And of course, you can't but imagine the worst, right? And, you know, I was reading one thing that said that, look, if it had got a leak, it'd be over in a second because the pressure at that depth, it would just crush it. Yeah, obviously they could run out of oxygen. The fact that they're not communicating at all is a problem. They don't have any build. If somehow or other the crew, and it takes like 8 or 10 hours just to get back up to the surface, it's a very slow thing to repressurize or depressurize, I guess. But also, they've got like 17, I think, external deadbolts on this device, and somebody from the outside has to undo it or you can't get out. So if they manage to somehow get to safety but didn't have any way to let people know they were in safety, they would still die inside the thing because nobody can let them out. They can't get out from the inside. They have to be let out from the outside. They're like locked in this device. And I think it's fair to say it's experimental. They even make you sign a waiver. You know, we understand that this isn't certified by anybody. This is experimental. We could die. We could get hurt. One of the guys who had gone down in it recently, I was reading a thing that he said is that, you know, he's like, wow, this is, you know, some improvised stuff, right? The way this is designed. So I'm amazed that these people sign up for this experience. It's like, $250,000 a person,
I think it is. Yeah, it's expensive. I sure wouldn't want to go down there.
No. And I'm already kind of like, I could not be a submariner. I could not do that because, you know, like mild claustrophobia kind of stuff. But going down to see the Titanic, I just don't think this is going to have a good ending on this story, unfortunately. David, thanks so much for the update. But yeah, sort of like the more details I read on this, the more discouraging it became.
You have such a gift I know that you have a Moreau and you have a Marconi and all this other stuff, but it's like, here's the worst story ever. Oh, let me make it worse. If they land on an island,
even
they
if
still
they
can't
got
get
out,
out.
Okay,
I'm
yeah,
Andrew McKay.
Still gonna be trapped and die.
That's awful. That's so awful. I woke up to read that this morning, and gosh, and pray for those people.
If it's a miracle, if they live, I'll celebrate like everybody else does, of course. I just don't want you to get your hopes up too much because it's a really bad situation. 5:58 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, remember how we're supposed to be sending, well, not we so much, but we're not sending like our F-16s is now my understanding. It's that we are authorizing NATO partners to send their F-16s to Ukraine. So, but because we control the technology, basically, and we get to say who uses it because it's our jets, even though they're old jets at this point, some of the newer ones too, but there's always upgrades and blocks and whatever. The point is that, you know, this whole process is not going to be fast. I was reading a thing yesterday that said that basically we're months away because of all the sign-offs and checks and arranging for the training, and where are you going to do the training, and who's going to do the training, and just all of the things, and training the maintainers, because the F-16 is a very sophisticated platform, and so having the mechanics who are going to be able to work on them. Those of you who know the Blue Angels, you get this concept. The maintainers are crucial. And so all of that means that Ukraine's not going to be getting F-16s anytime soon. Also, note that there's a thing the other day where they said that maybe the Ukraine war is going to be like a decade-long war. You know, the idea this is just going to sort of decisively end in October seems overly optimistic.